Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. Today's episode is all about using technology in work. Sounds like a no-brainer, right? Even though many translators and interpreters admit that they like putting pen to paper, we depend on technology and tools to make us more productive and to maintain the high quality of our work. Yet this is a controversial topic, especially the debate surrounding the advances in machine translation. How does technology affect our work and what lies ahead? We also often get questions from listeners on the beginner end of the spectrum about translation environment tools or CAT tools, which ones are best, and how to choose the right ones when you're starting out. So when we were discussing who to invite for this topic, our decision was easy, and we're thrilled that he said yes to our invitation. We're excited to welcome Jost Zetsche today. Jost Zetsche is a translation industry and translation technology consultant, a widely published author on various aspects of translation and localization, and an ATA-certified English to German technical translator. In 1999, Jost co-founded International Writers Group, LLC, on the Oregon coast. Originally from Hamburg, Germany, he earned a PhD in the field of Chinese translation history and linguistics at the University of Hamburg. He sits on the editorial board for multilingual magazine, the Journal of Internationalization and Localization, and the ATA Chronicle. In 2018, he was awarded with an honorary membership to the ATA. Since 2016, he has been contracting with the United Bible Societies to help create and maintain the Translation Insights and Perspectives tool. Welcome, Jost.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thanks for joining us, Jost. We both always enjoy talking to you and reading your columns in the Chronicle, the ATA Chronicle, and of course, your own publications, the Translator's Toolbox and the Toolbox Journal.
Thank you.
So we felt that you would definitely have great tips to share on this topic and that we could all learn some smart habits for using technology in our work and educating ourselves about the changing technological landscape in our profession. So if you don't mind, let's just jump in just to tell people who you are and a little bit about yourself. If you could tell our listeners about your translation business, when and how you started your freelance career and how it's evolved over time.
Sure. So like many, especially here in the US, have come to my translation career not on a particularly straight path. Mm-hmm. Like Veronica just read, my background is academic. I have a degree in Chinese studies, which really qualified me to go into academia. Mm-hmm. But just after I graduated with my PhD in Germany, we moved to the U.S. and I just didn't have a network here in the U.S. to place me at a university, and which really is, I think, the only way to get into academics. You know, you need your people that sort of put you where they want you to be, and so I started to work for a localization company in Bellingham, Washington, and I worked for them for 2 years, and I kind of liked what I did there. I was a translator, but also ran the technology for them. And when we moved back here to the Oregon coast, which is where my wife grew up and where her parents are living, I decided to kind of start my own business as a translator and other things that I'm also doing, like, you know, writing about translation technology and consulting, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, if you talk to Europeans or or people from South America or elsewhere, you often have a more straight path to translation with a classical education in translation. Mm-hmm. I did do translation work as part of my studies. I actually wrote about translation for my master's and PhD thesis, but did not have a classical translation education, in the classical sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what does a typical workday look like for you, and what changes have you had to make because of the pandemic?
My wife is a pastor, and there's one thing that unites pastors and translators. Our work is very varied.
Okay.
So typically before we, each go to our places of work, we ask each other what we're doing, what we're planning to do the coming mm-hmm. day or the present day. And it's really fun because there's so much variety in what she has to say, and there's a lot of variety in what I have to say. So my typical workday, I think there is no typical workday for me. I'm mm-hmm. I'm doing too many different things. So I'm spending about, I think, 40, maybe 30% of my time doing just translation, mm-hmm. editing translation. I spent about 40 to 50% of my time right now with this translation insights and perspectives tool, for which I curate data about translation and enter it into the tool so it's accessible. And the remaining percent I spend with consulting and writing. Like you mentioned, I write my newsletter and I write a number of other things also, and that, takes time as mm-hmm. well. But between those things, there's, plenty of variety to be had. So it's never, today is never like yesterday, and tomorrow will be different also, sort of. I do actually, I think, which is a little uncommon, I do have an office outside my house. So I have a separate house where I work.
Okay.
Which I love. I know it's very, very uncommon for freelance translators to have that. I assume both of you are working from mm-hmm. home. But
right.
I did that when my kids were really little, so 20-some years ago. And I have never regretted that, because it makes it much more easy for me to separate work and free time. So I get to my office usually between 8 and 9 or so, and go home usually around, I don't know, 6 or 7 or so. But when I'm home, I'm completely home. Of course, I have a computer at home, so I could theoretically access stuff, but I don't. And mm-hmm. and that's just really lovely.
That's nice.
And as far as the pandemic goes, we talked a little bit before this interview. I think the main difference for me as far as the pandemic goes is that I am not traveling. I used to travel quite a bit to conferences mm-hmm. where I, presented or consulting assignments. And obviously this didn't happen during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I love it. So there are many terrible things about the pandemic, clearly. So I don't want to belittle any of the hardship terrible things that happen mm-hmm. to people. But if I would point out one positive thing for me, is it would be that I have not traveled. I, I'm 6'7" tall, so flying on a plane is really painful.
Yeah.
I feel like, I'm a little bit older than the two of you, and I've seen like enough of the world. I don't need to travel anymore. I'm very happy where I am. And it was a great experience that much that we thought could only be done through travel mm-hmm. Can actually be done without travel. So I don't plan to go back. I don't plan to resume travel like I used to before the pandemic hit. I plan to, I'm happy to do presentations still and all that, but Zoom is a good way to do that, comparable platforms.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Everything in moderation, right? And travel in moderation.
Exactly. I mean, there are, I do miss, I do miss meeting people. So the ATA conference will certainly be, the place that I will always go to, just because it's lovely to see people and hug people mm-hmm. and feel that community.
Yeah.
But you know, probably like you, there were many more conferences than just the ATA conference. And so I, those I will cut out, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you know, the more I hear about this idea of an office, the more attractive it sounds to me.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think about it because I really like the idea of, you know, having a different work environment where you're not tempted with all the, or distracted with everything that, you know, happens in your house, even though my kids go to school and preschool still, just being working from home is really hard.
Yeah.
And that leads to our next question. As you may know, on our podcast, we often talk about work-life clarity rather than work-life balance. And we believe it's extremely important for freelance language professionals. It's a term we picked up on another podcast, actually. It's a podcast called The Deliberate Freelancer by Melanie Paget Powers. And we wanted to know your thoughts on this concept of work-life clarity and whether you try to protect the boundaries between your work and personal life.
I'm fanatic about it, yes. I feel really strongly that I love my work. I mean, I don't like every aspect of my work, but overall, I really like my work. But I feel very strongly that there are times when I need to be completely separated from it. In fact, we had an appointment to record this podcast a few weeks ago, which I canceled on an embarrassingly short notice because it turned out that my wife and I needed to go to our cabin. And that was the only time we could do it. So this is an example. We have a little, our family has a little cabin close by, and we leave every Friday afternoon and come back Saturday afternoon or evening. And there's no internet access, no nothing. I mean, it's just, you know, time to watch birds and or whatever, you know, to go swimming and stuff like that. So I feel that's really important. I also do spend an hour every day on the beach. I live on the Oregon coast, the beach. I can actually see the beach from my office. And that is super important to me. And interestingly, it's often the most productive time of my day because it seems to me that, doesn't seem to me, it's just a fact that as I'm walking on the beach, watching my dogs chase birds and, you know, whatever, watch the waves and the sun and stuff, or the rain, because I'm on the Oregon coast, I have the best ideas. I really do. You know, if I look back on what I think of as good projects that I've done over the last, whatever, 5 or 10 years, they, I think, without exception, were born on the beach while I was walking. And so I think that's a, you know, it seems like a long time to spend walking an hour, but it's time that is not only...
it's lovely.
And it's you know, obviously, it's also exercise and stuff, but it's productive. I mean, it makes, you know, obviously, I'm not making money per se, but I am actually, because I'm having ideas that I can maybe then make into a profitable project, or doesn't always have to be profitable, right? It can be also just a good project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I heard somewhere not that long ago, somebody was saying there's a lot of power in giving yourself the space to think, because we don't do that regularly. You know, we just go from one thing to the next, one project to the next, one in, one out, rushing to the next thing for our kid or for whatever somebody needs us. And we don't actually just make the time to think.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree with that. And you know, what I find, and I think you probably will agree, is that if you try to think close to screens, it's much more difficult to think, you know, because the screens then, you know, make you want to access information, whatever, you know, and you are kind of pushed off your path of thinking.
They're very
Whereas
distracting.
When you are out in the wild or swimming or whatever you might do for an extended period of time, that's when you have ideas and that's where you really change your life and your work life for the better, I think.
Ah, that's wonderful. Love it. So what do you think are some smart habits that have been crucial in your career?
Well, I think we talked about some already. One is certainly my walk on the beach. I think it's been a good and helpful habit for me to be away from home for work. Again, I don't want to emphasize that too much because I know that the vast majority of listeners will not have that situation. But I think if you do have the possibility to do that, you know, without spending too much extra cost, that's a really good way of having a good work-life balance and just an overall good work experience. One habit that I have that I like and that has been really productive for me is to write stuff out by hand. You know, kind of ironic because I'm invited to talk about technology, but when I start something or write something out, I always do it by hand. And I have terrible handwriting, so it's super safe. No one can read it except me, mostly. And but that is a great way of, you know, there is beauty about the empty white paper, and it invites you to be creative. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing to be creative. Doesn't always work, but it works a lot better than hitting on the keyboard for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. So Joost, let's shift gears to talk about one of the topics that you're an expert in, which is using technology and various tools in our work. You've been a real ambassador for improving technical expertise and knowledge about software tools in our professions. And we love the Translators Toolbox, your computer primer for translators, which is now in its 14th edition, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, and the Toolbox Journal, which is a monthly journal for translators that you've been working on for 17 years.
Uh-huh, yes.
And we highly recommend those to our colleagues. So we'll definitely link to those, by the way, in the show notes of the resources for this episode, as well as your books, so that others can find them and also subscribe. But with all that you know about technology and tools in our field, what are your thoughts on using technology in our work as translators and interpreters?
Well, it's a big question.
Kind of a big question.
I think the most important thing that I really can't speak towards interpreters. I mean, I know that I would not be giving right advice if I would be talking about interpreting, but I can talk about translation. And I think the best thing that a translator can do is to be highly educated in technology. And what I mean by that is that a translator needs to understand what role technology can play in his or her work life. And then from that knowledge, make decisions on what kind of technology they want to use. It would be wrong to say that translators need to use certain technologies. Well, certain technologies they will have to use. I mean, a computer is something that we all have to use, most of us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not say that there is a certain that there is certain tools that you need to have or certain processes, technological processes that you need to use, but you need to understand them, and so that you can to yourself and to your clients explain why you do or you don't use them. And you know, that sounds kind of like a no-brainer, but it's not. I think that most translators don't really understand all the available technology.
No.
They understand it, I think, better today than they did maybe 20 years ago. But technology is changing a lot. And technology is super complex.
Yes.
So if you, for instance, look at the current state of machine translation, it's not easy to understand. It's driven by, you know, by something that's called narrow artificial intelligence, which is, you know, a very complex technology. And translators don't have to become coders. Translators don't have to, you know, work, I mean, to be super experts in, say, AI, but they need to understand what role AI can or should or will play in their work lives. And then from that kind of background, they need to make educated decisions. And I think that what's also important is that those decisions should not be based on emotions or on, you know, be feeling defensive about something or having an agenda. aside from the agenda mm-hmm. that you want to create the most productive workplace possible. That's the agenda you should have, period. And you should not, you know, fall into, say, an ideology that a certain kind of technology is right or is wrong. That's a very sort of mm-hmm. high level answer to your question, but I think it's the best I can say. That's there is no preset mm-hmm. kind of technologies that every translator needs to have, because translators do. I mean, one of the beauties of our profession mm-hmm. is that we are so varied between ourselves. So I have never competed with you, Maddalena, mm-hmm. and I have never competed with you, Veronica, and I will never compete with the two of you, right? Never. Mm-hmm. And which is really different. I mean, think about it. You know, in other industries, everybody competes with everyone, yeah. not in our industry. There are some people who are also translating in my language direction, who are also translating similar subject matter, but it's just a handful, and certainly not enough that I need to compete with them, because there's plenty of work out in those fields. And that kind of spirit makes it really beautiful to work in the field of translation, I think, because we can talk much more freely about how we do stuff, because we don't need to be afraid to give away our secrets. There is no secret.
Thank you for saying that too, because I do sometimes come across translators and interpreters who say, oh, there's so much competition. And I'm thinking, who are you competing with? Because, mm-hmm. you know, the people that I, you know, connect with, we're not competing with each other. And if anything, we're helping each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I like that way of thinking about it.
Well, I mean, of course, you know, you have sites like prose.com or others where it seems to be a competitive process. And it probably is a competitive process, sort of I think mostly for translators who are still looking for what they really want to do as translators, who might not have specialized enough to have a good set of clients in their areas, etc.
So it feels
I can see that there is some competition there, but that's really not, I think, what you see when you've worked in this field for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I have not a single person I'm competing with, and have not had for many years.
Right. So speaking of people starting out, or anybody, I guess, in general, it can be really hard to choose which tools or tool is right for you. So do you have anything that you would, any recommendation to help our colleagues when they're trying to decide on which tool is right for them, or even newcomers, you know, how should they prioritize what technology and tools are important at the beginning of their career?
What I would do is to look at three different aspects. I actually, a few years ago, sort of put together kind of a matrix, or like a pseudo matrix for making a decision what tool to use. And what I did was not look at the things that we traditionally look at, but look at the environment of the translator. So whatever tool your client uses is really important for you, right? If your client mm-hmm. uses a certain set of tools, or a tool that he or it, whatever they want you to use, then, well, you better use that tool. Otherwise, you're not going to work for that client. If your peer group of translators that you already know and that is likely supportive uses a certain kind of tool, I think it would be a good idea to maybe look into that kind of tool also, because they are the ones that are going to support you in figuring out their tool and in helping you along. And I think, so those are two. And the third, I would say, depending on who you are, what kind of text you translate, and what your willingness is to become more or less technical, that's also, I think, important as to what kind of tool you want to use. There are tools that are, I think, maybe a little bit more technical than others, and which might be really great for people who have a propensity to be, you know, to not worry about something that looks technical, at least. And others, or don't have that, and so they better not use those tools. So I think that's really, you know, I think that's how I would go. I would not go, well, this is the market leader, so I have to have the market leading tool. Instead, I would go like, I'm working or I want to work for certain clients which use that particular tool. So let's do that. And if the clients don't use a certain tool, then look at the people around me that can help me. And if that also is not something, then finally I would look at what tool personally seems attractive to me and matches my set and level of expertise.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned earlier that it's really important for translators to be educated on technology and stay on top of this and have that knowledge. That's really key to have that knowledge about technology. Do you have any tips on how to stay informed and be aware of the technological changes and developments that concern translation?
Well, subscribe to my newsletter. Yeah. It's free, so I feel very unashamed to say that. You know, you don't have to pay to subscribe to the newsletter. I really think that is a good way of getting at least some idea. I also would use social media to follow people or companies that have interesting and good things to say. One way I think of quickly putting together a good set of accounts that one could follow on whatever kind of social media platform you use is that you pick somebody you know has expertise in, say, you know, technology, and look at the people who he is following or she is following. That gives you a quick you know, starting point for finding knowledgeable people. And then I would also not just be super narrow about gaining expertise. So we talked about, or I mentioned artificial intelligence before, and there's, for instance, one guy I'm following on Twitter. His name is Ben Dixon. He's spelled just like he sounds. And he just writes about artificial intelligence. He has no idea about translation whatsoever. I mean, I'm sure he's, you know, but whatever he writes about artificial intelligence always has meaning for, you know, artificial intelligence being used in machine translation and other aspects of you know, of translation. And so I'm learning a lot from him, even though he has no translation expertise, but he has expertise in the area of technology that presently probably has the biggest impact on our world as translators also. So those are really good accounts or people to follow, I think.
Great tip.
Yeah, thank you for that. So speaking of artificial intelligence and neural machine translation and all of these things, we often see some fear and uncertainty among our colleagues on how this technology will affect our profession going forward. Do you have any advice on how to overcome that fear and, you know, not be worried that this technology will make our jobs redundant?
Well, I think that anyone who has spent just a little time in translation or has spent more than just a few minutes, you know, superficially looking at discussions, knows that we're not going to be redundant. I mean, that's a that ship has sailed. I mean, you know, that we don't need to talk about that, I think. But for many of us, the kind of work we're doing has changed or is about to change. And I think what I would do as a young translator is to make decisions on what kind of translations I want to do. So, for instance, there's nothing wrong with doing post-editing. Personally, I don't like to do it, and I don't really want to do it, and I don't do it, and I think won't do it. But there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if you are interested in that kind of work, then you should really study to become an expert in that kind of work. Because, of course, there are different ways of post-editing a text that was, well, that's implied that it was translated by machine translation versus editing a text that was translated by another translator or translating a text from scratch. Make a decision on what you want to do. Look whether there is enough work in that particular area in, you know, matched with your subject matter expertise. And then, you know, and then do that. Look for those kinds of jobs. Mm. I think what we have also learned, and I think it's a really interesting thing that we should have all taken away from this year of pandemic, is we have talked for years about the fact that it's really important to become experts in something, that a general translator is not going to make it. You know, a general translator is essentially an unknowledgeable translator, because he has all and no expertise, essentially. So it's important, and we've known that for a long time, to have expertise in something where you can stand out. But I think what we've learned in this year is that it's maybe not enough to have expertise only in one area. I think that if you look back at especially the first 3 or 4 months of the pandemic, some of us were completely overwhelmed with work, but some had no work whatsoever. And because our particular areas of expertise were just not asked for, you know, because and it doesn't have to be a pandemic. I mean, if you are only specializing in oil and gas translation, I'm not sure, Veronica, whether you are, you know, being in Texas and being being a Russian translator, whether you're doing much in that field. But if you're only doing oil and gas, well, the floor is going to go out underneath from you every 7 years because the industry collapses. So I think it's really important. And to me, that's one of the most precious things that we've learned from the pandemic, is that we need to be experts in not just one field. We need to be experts, but in more than one field.
I think that's a really good point. And I've heard a lot of colleagues say that they had to learn that lesson during the pandemic. And I mean, I say this as humbly as I can. I learned that lesson a long time ago, because that type of thing did happen in my business years ago. And I learned very quickly, like, wow, this takes a long time to recover from sometimes. And so I think that we need to be aware of it. And I think we need to not be afraid of it, because you're right, it doesn't have to be a pandemic. It could be anything at any time. This is always a possibility. And I also think it's important to not believe that you can only do one thing. You know, diversity is a good thing in many, many areas of life. And so in your business too, it's a very smart thing to be diverse in either your services or your, like you said, your specializations, your expertise, because you never know what's going to be, you know, here today, maybe not here tomorrow.
Exactly. And we are, you know, fortunately complex enough beings to have varied interests, you know, to have lots of different interests. If I cannot think of what my other specialization might be, well, I should probably look to my personal interests.
It's true.
You know, or of course what the market requires also, that's another possibility. But typically, you know, you have whatever it might be, enough personal interest to quickly come up with something where you don't have to start from scratch, but where you already have good enough knowledge to quickly then become a translation expert, or relatively quickly become a translation expert in that also.
That's a very good piece of advice, yeah. So finally, Joost, this is sort of a put you on the spot type of question. If you could suggest any 3 tools for translators, what would they be? Or kinds of tools, I suppose.
Well, I can actually give you a brand name.
Okay.
And that's IntelliWeb Search. That is, to me, that is the most, that's a tool that I use by far the most of all tools. IntelliWeb
Search.
In case you or your listeners don't know what it is, it's just a tiny tool developed by an Italian to English translator, Michael Farrell, who is, that allows you to access any website or anything on your hard drive to look for terms. And so it's a dictionary tool, but it's just very well made and is just really great. It's a really good tool. You need to do some configuration when you first install it.
Sure.
But it's one of those tools that once you start to use it and have maybe spend a couple of hours to write your own little scripts to get to websites and your dictionaries that you have installed in your hard drive, you will never not use it again. I mean, it's very good. So that's and it's tiny. It doesn't take any resources of your computer, et cetera, et cetera.
Great.
Then I would, and there I would not name a brand, I would certainly have one, if not two, different translation environment tools or CAT tools that I would use, and again, the way to decide which to use, I would, you know, refer back to what we decided earlier. Look at what your clients use, what they want you to use. It's possible that you are that you might be able to work for your clients with a tool that is not the one that your client uses, but make sure that you can deliver properly formatted and you know and good files, and then look at what your peers do, and then look at your own expertise. And lastly, the tool that I'm using a lot, and that's probably not applicable to everyone. You know, we all have to deal with PDFs all the time, and it's really frustrating and all that. And we, you know, we could do many podcasts about that. But the tool that I really like is called Abby Fine Reader. And the reason why I like that, it's a, you know, very well-known tool, obviously. But not only does it allow you to do all kinds of things with PDFs, but it has a little utility that comes with it. And you wouldn't believe how often I use it. It's called, I think it's called Abby Screenshot Reader or something. And it allows you, it's essentially an OCR, so optical character recognition, way of making a screenshot of a website, of a graphic, of whatever, and then converting the image text into real text that you can then, you know, translate or whatever. I'm using it all the time.
Oh, it's, that's nice. Yeah, I didn't know about that part of Abby Fine Reader. Okay.
Yeah, it's super nifty. I think you can probably buy it as a standalone tool also, but usually it comes with the, you know, with a big product. And Abby Fine Reader is a little bit of an expense to buy, I think, but it's a good tool to have.
It's a worthwhile one.
Yeah, I love it too. Thank you so much for these great tips, Joost. You really shared some wonderful advice that we find useful, and I'm sure our listeners will find useful as well.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, we'd love it if you join us for a special segment. We'd like to ask our guests to share something with our listeners about a favorite book, a tool, or a resource, and we're calling this segment Guest Favorites. So is there anything that you'd like to recommend?
So I want to be really impolite in recommending something that I at least played a big role in creating. And you mentioned that earlier, Veronica, the Translation Insights and Perspectives tool. And it's just an amazing tool that does this. It's a tool that looks at... So the Bible has been translated. The Bible has been translated into about 3,000 languages, more far more than any other text, and ever will be than ever any other text. And this tool looks at the text of the Bible and looks at how this has been translated into those 3,000 languages and back translates it into English. And so what you are able to see then is to see how words and concepts and grammatical features, etc., are being transformed in these languages that you before didn't even know existed before you looked at the tool. And you can just be amazed about the ingenuity of human language. Of course, it's, you know, particularly interesting if you're interested in the Bible also, but even if you're not interested in the Bible, it's just one of those tools. So I've been working on this for close to 4 years. I've been entering lots of data. It's got incredibly much data at this point, and it's not done. It will go on forever and ever with or without me. And if you need a language fix or if you need a fix to assure you that translation really is something interesting and worthwhile, then that tool is really great to access, and you can it's freely accessible at tips.translation.bible.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah. Well, Joost, thanks so much for joining us today. We really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to find your tips about technology useful for their own businesses.
Great. It was a pleasure to talk to the both of you.
Thank you. Yeah. But before we go, where can our colleagues learn more about you or find you online?
Oh, so my Twitter account is Jeromobot, Jeromobot. My website is internationalwriters.com. Yeah, and that's about it, I think. Those are two good places.
Oh, thank you. We'll add those links to our show notes and to our listeners. If you are not following Yoast on Twitter yet, you should. That's a great way to really stay abreast of, you know, what happens in the field of translation technology and just follow other accounts that are relevant. So, thanks so much for joining us today, Yoast. And that's it for this episode. Next week, our email subscribers will get a summary of this episode, including the links to all the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
And if you like this episode, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we have recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to that in the show notes.
Talk to you soon. We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.